Well, we're at the end of this segment. It's time to start the new segment of hardware and other stuff that's hardware related. This week it just kind of broke to hardware, software, and other stuff.
Well, I think we're going to do like a new intro, I guess.
Yeah.
It's Wednesday.
Is it Wednesday? We don't know how we're doing this yet.
It might be Wednesday, February 28th.
We're doing daily news now, but we record it all at once, so... Yeah. This one is starting with technology, and the first headline story with technology is that the official Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus launch video has surfaced. My biggest takeaway from this video is Samsung is really, really pushing the phone as a desktop replacement with the docking station thing. Like, you just plunk your phone down, and it gives you full desktop Android, basically.
It did look a little clunky, though, because the phone was still your only point of control.
Yeah.
I can't see adapting to that.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea. Maybe in the next version, give me like one of those laser keyboards.
I think now some of the docs that I saw for this at Computex, Microsoft was the farthest ahead. Microsoft, of course, has killed their Windows phones, as far as I know. But the docs that I saw at Computex were amazing because it gives you the full-size keyboard and mouse and display, and you could run the Office applications, and it works great. But I think this is where Google, you know, we've been reading about for the last few months, a year, where they're going to merge Chrome OS and Android, and they've been working on other stuff. And so I think that phones have become so powerful, they could actually maybe be a replacement for notebooks, especially like Chromebooks, in some scenarios. And so Chrome OS and Android sort of becoming one thing, and you can run applications in either scenario. I think that's probably a good thing. And so if this is going to be baked into that operating system, that'll be great.
The other thing that didn't make any sense to me about this is they had that big, beautiful screen. They had like a 4K 30-inch monitor that they plugged. So it's like, well, we got the monitor, but we didn't bother to get a keyboard and a mouse.
Yeah. They were using it as like a touchpad.
Then why would we do that?
Yeah.
The other thing is I watched this and it was disgusting. I don't watch a lot of commercials or ads. You know what? My favorite YouTube channels, of course, I would never ad block because that's wrong. But I got the Google Music, so I'm YouTube Red, so I don't see ads there anyway. So this was just sort of like, it was like when you take a drink and it's an artificial sweetener. It's like, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
I don't think Samsung meant to release this ad this soon anyway.
See, but that's where I'm going with this. Was it a leak or was it a leak? Because it got a lot of, we're talking about it. Would we have been talking about the Samsung S9 release? Probably not. We're talking about it because it's a leak. And everybody, the headlines, they were all over the place. So that's a brilliant move if it was on purpose.
I don't know. I don't give Samsung that much credit. I had a very tedious conversation once with a Samsung marketing executive, and they didn't understand why their video that had like 3 million views only had like 7 comments. And it's like, because those views aren't real. And they're like, I don't understand. What do you mean they're not real?
But at the same time, they did subvert the entire South Korean government and only did a year in jail for it. So... they might be a little more canny than you think.
It is entirely possible. An AI has been trained to spot heart disease using a retina scan. This sounds amazing. I mean, can you imagine you're in checkout at the Kroger and there's a machine there and it's like, would you like to see if you've got heart disease? And it's like, okay. And it's like, bad news. You need to check in right now.
But so that's the good way of doing it. It's non-invasive. Of course, we all probably should know if we have heart disease, do something about it. But let's look at it from the other way, where it's like, you know, you go to the insurance-a-tron, also at Kroger, and it's like, oh, step up and see if you qualify. It's like, pre-existing condition. Please exit the store.
Yeah.
Or you could go to, like, you're going to get on a roller coaster, and it's like, oh, step up to the eye scanner. Oh, I'm sorry, but you're too heart diseased to get on this roller coaster. We can't take that risk.
Oh, what a dystopian future. God, an insurance company that only insures people that will never file a claim. I mean, what sort of dystopia is that?
That's the wet dream of every insurance company right there. That's what they want.
Oh, AI and automation. Also, Foxconn is spending $4 billion on an automation push because, you know, even Foxconn is feeling the pinch of increased labor costs. So they're moving to automate even more than they already have.
They continue to talk about how this is not replacing people, but augmenting. But I just don't understand that argument. I don't get how you're not going to spend $4 billion to not hire fewer people.
Well, whatever level of automation we have right now for GDDR production, and you know, GPU production apparently is not enough, because that is the single, like, RAM production in all of its forms is the single driving thing for the cost insanity of all of the products that exist.
Yeah, but it's sort of the, it's like that, you know, the Model T sold incredibly well, in no small part because you had to pay the employees who built it so much money, they all bought one. So in the reverse of that, who's mining cryptocurrency if they're all jobless and can't afford the $1,600 video card?
It's like, I'm gonna lease this video card, and then I'm gonna use the cryptocurrency, its cryptocurrency's abilities to help pay it off and try to get it back down to a normal price.
But the human element there doesn't add anything to the equation. So, I mean, why, if you have video card, just pay for the electricity. Use it yourself.
I'm thinking about the JP Morgan thing where they were like, we're going to get in on helping people pay for their iPhones. What if, you know, JP Morgan will help you buy a graphics card, but you got to install a Tray utility from JP Morgan that's going to mine cryptocurrency on your card while you're not using it, and that'll help pay down your balance. But they make money coming and going, because if you don't do that, then you end up paying the full retail price for your graphics card. But if you do that, then you end up, you know, paying retail or maybe slightly less for your graphics card.
That was Goldman. No correction.
Goldman. Oh, okay.
I can totally see that. I could also see that with cars, like future cars, you know, because if this whole data thing shakes out, I think one of the ways they're going to be able to offset the anger of the masses, it's like, oh, yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah, you can get this Corvette. But you got to ride share it a couple of days a week, and you got to sign off, and we're going to take all that data and sell it. And you don't, you know, that's, so it's sort of like ad supported cars.
Lamborghini timeshare. It's like your time slot is from 2 to 4 a.m. Yeah. on Wednesdays.
And especially if it's self driving, because it'll just, it's like, well, your time's over. See you later. And it goes and drives itself to the other house.
Oh, what a time to be alive. MEM transistors, the foundational circuit to element to neuromorphic computing. Okay, what the hell? What?
It's a lot of big words.
I saw this and it was just like, what does this even mean? And so this is actually kind of brilliant. Now, they're talking about this from AI, from an AI perspective. They're wanting to move some of the computation that happens directly onto RAM. And that makes sense in a lot of ways, because a lot of memory operations, a lot of your vector operations, things like AVX 512, if you could do that on RAM, you don't have to shuttle it back and forth to the processor. And there are simple operations that it would make sense to do actually on the RAM.
So we actually did a story last week that was similar in terms of the idea behind this is to mimic the human synapse. So the, you know, the existing transistor isn't really that much like a synapse, because a synapse can not just be on or off, but it can be percentages of voltage. You know, how much energy is going through the synapse. So this is a, what, like 7-terminal mm-hmm. with the control MEM resistor, or what do they call it? MEM resistor or something like that?
MEM transistor.
And but it's similar to the other thing in that it is moving computation onto the memory, because there's simply too much lag time, especially with AI, to go between the two.
Yeah, a lot of AI research now is saying that for certain kinds of AI computation, for the AI that we're doing, you know, with things like TensorFlow, it is dramatically way faster to just re-architect the chip and move the data a little closer to the CPU. And so you see things like from ARM and from other companies that are really, truly AI breakthroughs, not because it's some new algorithm or some new design, it's the locality of data that is speeding things up. And so they're saying, well, the actual computation that we're doing on the CPU is really not the complex part of the CPU. Let's just shove over that, all that over into the memory circuit instead, and try to solve the problem that way. So it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. We're already seeing commercial implementations of things like this, or the fact that data locality is what is going to drive speed and AI from all the major players.
I don't think they have any, this, like, they're not, this is not actually functional yet, at least on a scale that would be useful to anybody, but it is pretty incredible what they've done. I think the real question is, can I mine Bitcoin with it?
And will it make mining Bitcoin faster?
Yeah.
Or what is the algorithm that this actually goes with that we could, you know, I would take some nice hash coins. That would be totally okay. Dart 2. So if you're a web developer, you know the hell that is developing with JavaScript. It's like, oh, Webpack. Oh, no, but Webpack replaces Babel. Okay, that's cool. And then so, well, what about this? It's like, well, we need to dedupe the stuff because everything's a mess. Yeah, it's not a lot of fun. Dart was kind of fun, but Dart 2 really looks to be when Google's going to get it right. So Dart 2, it's a reboot of a language that brings you, it's like their core tenets, productivity, fast, portable, approachable, reactive. The big changes here is that they want to offer the functionality for native applications. So you can write applications for Android or iOS or whatever, and it'll run in Dart 2.
Yeah, it seemed like the biggest thing here was the mobile stuff. And of course, if you're developing for the web, mobile is an inescapable hell that you must go through. So nice to be able to do it all at once.
Yeah. And if you're a developer, you also work in the cloud, which means you need to know how fast stuff is. I like this article from Phoronix. It's a 36-way comparison of Amazon EC2, Google's Compute Engine, and Microsoft Azure versus desktop Intel and AMD CPUs. And the results here were kind of surprising. Some of these EC2 instances from Amazon are complete trash, just complete and utter trash.
Microsoft did not do well. The low-end Microsoft stuff lost pretty much every test. And they didn't do better than middle of the pack in any of them. But the EC2 and the Google and Amazon stuff were
at better, the high end.
Were better than the hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was, I thought I was surprised by that. But it was the nice packages.
Yeah.
So you gotta,
you'll be paying a lot of money.
Performance.
Yeah. Some of those packages, you could probably get 4 or 5 Ryzen 1800Xs by the end of the month for what those packages will cost if you're running them 24/7.
But it was compute per dollar. So if you are running that under load at all times and getting maximum performance out of it, it still is, it makes more sense to pay the insane cost and use the cloud.
Yeah, spin it up, do the thing, and then shut it down.
As long as you don't leave your key out there for somebody to find, or leave it unsecured, as everybody seems to do.
Or you have a ridiculous query that should have been optimized years ago, and it's like, it takes 3 years to run on the largest instance. It's probably fine. Also, this is kind of a software thing. So there have been improvements to Wine with Direct3D and OpenGL. And so they're mapping more Direct3D functions to OpenGL, and it turns out that older games can benefit from modern OpenGL with this type of a wrapper. So they're getting better performance than you ever could on the native API because it's sort of transparently bringing it up to the modern version of that API.
This was World of Warcraft specifically, which, when did that come out?
Like 2011? Maybe it's even older than that.
It's gotta be, no, yeah, it was way before that.
Maybe it was the time it was, the engine was redone.
That was probably like 05, 06 or something like that, at least.
Oh, yeah, the original version probably, yeah. I don't know. I'm not a big WoW player.
I think that was the only thing this was tested on for, so it's very specific, but yeah.
A lot of WoW fans out there working on really, really deep, amazing computer science because it's like, yeah, we're going to do this. It's like unused GPU time. It's like, okay, we don't have to do that. We can do it another way. It's like, okay.
So you're saying grinding for gold in WoW is basically the same as digging into GPU drivers?
Kind of.
As far as stimulation.
Well, I mean, digging into the GPU drivers is definitely a more productive use of your time, right?
What's the WoW gold to US dollar conversion these days?
At one point, I think it was better. Like if you were, you know, if you were an Albanian alpaca farmer, it made more sense to mine WoW gold. I don't believe that is still the case.
Which activity do you think is more monotonous?
Oh, I think the alpaca thing is way more interesting. So the gold mining.
I think so too.
I mean, alpacas, they have a mine of their own. They're just, some of them can be ill-tempered. It's just,
they also have different distances at which they aggro. So there's, you know, there's some comparison.
It's just random. That would be an interesting mechanic in a video game. It's like, oh, this guy aggroes, you know, he aggroed a lot sooner than I expected, and he's going to follow me all the way back to town. I have to wait for the security guards in town to kill him.
That was a thing in WoW.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, was it random aggro distance?
Maybe. I didn't play it much. But I know that people had memorized how close you could get before they would trigger, and then they would plan.
The LA Times has been caught serving cryptocurrency mining scripts. So I was reading into this, and I really, it did not seem intentional.
No, this was another Amazon bucket.
Somebody else got access to the bucket. Oh, CoinHive. Oh, and it's stealthily running in the background.
Yeah, 30%. So the researcher found there were three different people who got into this Amazon bucket. The first one dropped a text file or added text to a file and was like, hey, just a friendly reminder, this is writable to the world. You should fix this. And I think what happened was the miners actually searched for that text. And then the third guy that came along found both that, and he was like, oh, I bet this is, yeah, there's the miner. And he contacted him.
Oops. Venezuela has made the news. This has actually been in the news for a while, but we haven't covered it. There's more detail now. So Venezuela is in terrible economic crisis. It's bad. Yeah. But they've got oil. They've got a lot of oil. So they've created some sort of cryptocurrency that's tied to oil, but not really. It turns out the whole thing's, well, at least according to this article, the whole thing's a farce. And if you read about it, it really does look like everything is a farce from other sources.
The big red flags is the fact that they can't answer which blockchain is going to power their cryptocurrency, despite already doing the ICO. Maybe it's going to be NIM. Maybe it's going to be Ethereum. No one is sure. Also, they partnered with this company, which they said was a global leader in cryptocurrency. It didn't exist before last week, and it's got a Twitter account with only tweets about this.
I bet organized crime is really frustrated with the internet because you can't just make up stuff anymore.
So, yeah, the other problem, if you're thinking, hey, I don't care about any of that, it's a new ICO, I want in. The thing you have to keep in mind is we have sanctions against Venezuela. That's part of their economic woes. And if you trade in this currency, you will be violating those sanctions. So, at least if you live in the United States. I don't know if the EU has anything like that going on, but they might.
Somebody in the EU can tell us because they probably do. They probably have something.
The other thing is they've claimed that this will be directly convertible to oil, like you said, because oil is the only thing they've got left. I mean, people are eating the flamingos in Venezuela, and you got flamingos. They're so beautiful and delicate. Bony. Yeah, there's not much meat. But there is no, like, you can't just go to a gas station and be like, hey, I'm going to turn in these coins and pump some gas. Or even, you know, to get the crude just directly from the refiners. All the refineries in Venezuela are state-owned. You know, it's socialism. So there's no conversion process. Nobody knows how you would get back your money with oil or what. The only thing they've announced is that you can pay your taxes with these things in Venezuela.
I think this is probably going to be a bigger mess.
Yeah.
In, like, very short order.
Probably. I don't know what the end game is, though. Like,
look at the dancing monkey. It's a distraction.
Maybe. The other thing they brought up is Maduro, I think that's the leader's name. This is probably unconstitutional, which a lot of the stuff he's done is unconstitutional. So,
but it's for the good of Venezuela.
Yeah, if he were removed from power or lost an election, which those elections, he doesn't tend to lose them, then this might just be the next government come in and be like, that was unconstitutional. It's gone. It's over. The coin is useless. Throw it away. We don't care. We're not honoring it.
Speaking of things that people wish were unconstitutional, at least some people, the game industry is fighting back against preservationists' effort to restore gameplay servers. So this has to do with old multiplayer online games that no longer have a server component of the game. Preservationists are working to restore that, and the companies that own the IP rights to the game are saying, not so fast. Even though you have legit copies of the game, we don't think it's okay for you to create servers that the game can connect to because you're not preserving it, you're making it to where it's playable. It's like, well, what's the difference?
Yeah, I suppose legally, they're right. It is their choice, and I'm sure the terms of service lay that out, but it's so disgusting and nasty because you sold me a product and then at some point you decided that I'm not allowed to use it anymore, or you made it such that I just simply can't use it.
There are a few companies that are treating this kind of thing right. LucasArts, I was surprised to see, is one of them. There's apparently this is some kind of online multiplayer game. I don't even have any idea what this is. Historians have brought back online games like LucasArts Habitat for public use with the original publisher's cooperation. So that's really, really surprising. But most companies are not interested in that at all.
Now, it is sort of, I don't know if they're really doing this for preservation purposes or if they're just using a loophole, but a lot of this argument is, hey, we're archiving these things, so we have a museum. World of Warcraft, for example. You could make a good argument that World of Warcraft is part of our society.
It's part of the culture.
It was a bigger part of the society during the times when it was, you know, the max subscribers.
Like 11 million people online playing.
And people, you know, dying because they weren't willing to walk away from the screen to eat and use the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, that happened a few times.
Yeah, so sociological impact, it seems like maybe we should preserve that. So a lot of museums and these, you know, game preservation societies are like, hey, we just want to preserve it. But they call these people that work on it affiliates because the curators themselves don't have the technical knowledge to do this. So they bring in outside people. And the game companies are saying, well, we're afraid if we let you do that, you could deputize the entire population as affiliates. And all of a sudden, they've got a free WoW server that they could play on. And we don't want that. So
seems crappy.
It is crappy. But I don't think that the people will win in this example.
No. Because. I mean, it's interesting that they're starting with WoW because I can imagine Nintendo fighting this tooth and nail. Well, like Nintendo would just be like, no.
Yeah, I don't think WoW is... There are people who want to bring back like the vanilla WoW, but aren't they going to do that themselves?
Yeah, there was some lawsuits about that already, and Blizzard's going to try to do that, I guess, somehow. Hmm. At least they said they were, to try to get the other people to go away. So.
But you just have to remember that when you buy a game and you agree to those terms, these days, if it's a multiplayer, it's probably not going to be around forever.
It is, by definition, transient.
Yeah.
Tesla has been accused of selling vehicles that it knows are defective in a new lawsuit. And I swear, I thought this was very similar to the guy that we reported on a couple of weeks ago, where he was saying, well, they're definitely making defective battery packs and they know it. And that
very
kind of thing.
Similar.
This is... So I wonder if there is something to this. There's only one lawsuit that Tesla has settled with somebody who is not satisfied with the quality of their car. So I don't know.
This is another one. It's like the woman from Google with the discrimination. You know, how can you tell? Because this person was fired. Is it sour grapes or were they really a whistleblower? Now, his claim is they would take cars that had been severely damaged or just didn't pass inspection or, you know, were real messed up and basically refurbish them and sell them as a used car. Even though it had never really been used, it was just mangled on the assembly line and sort of nursed back to health. And so he's saying that that is illegal, which it would be if it's true.
It's really interesting. I wonder how that's going to shake out in the long run. I wonder if that's going to affect Tesla's stock price or anything like that, if shareholders get wind of that.
I don't know. They, you know, Tesla did bring up, like you said, they have really high customer satisfaction. But a lot of that, I feel like, is a little bit of the, you know, the cult of personality. Sort of like Apple, where the people who drive Teslas feel like they're part of something because they bought a product.
You know what else is getting really scary? Mind reading. There's a mind reading algorithm that's using EEG data to reconstruct images based on what we perceive. Now, EEGs are a non-invasive scan. They just basically put some electrodes on your scalp and read your brain waves from outside your skull. So not a lot of resolution here. But with the data and some AI and some training, I guess, they're able to sort of get an idea of what image you have in your mind based on the EEG data.
And they're using faces. So something with a lot of small differences and characteristics. Now, this is not the first time they've done this, but previously they needed an MRI to do this, which, of course...
Much more resolution.
MRI, not easy to... surreptitiously subject somebody to one or move around. You know, you basically got to stuff somebody in a scary tunnel. But with EEG, look, you could carry them around. They're mobile. They have mobile versions of those. And it's like, oh, hey, try on this hat. And suddenly they're reading your mind.
Try on this hat. I've got this uncontrollable craving for bacon. What's going on?
So also the level of detail is pretty incredible because, you know, they really can't tell human faces from other human faces based on what you're seeing. So we're looking at, now what they didn't mention, but what I'm curious about, how much what to store the human thought process of recognizing a face for 20 seconds, how many gigabytes is that?
It would have to be, I mean, just the synapse connections, I would expect that number to be a very large number very large amount of data.
The NSA is going to need another data center.
Switching gears, I think, are we segueing into the nonsense section?
I think Flippy might still be in the... he could go either way.
Flippy can flip any which way.
Of course, we've talked about Flippy before.
We've talked about Flippy a lot.
Flippy was one of my favorite robots.
It's a hamburger flipping robot. It's just like, this is the automation. This is the fast food automation. This day cannot get here soon enough.
And I think we talked about this. It was the, might have been even 2016. It was a while back. Maybe it's like spring of 2017. So Flippy's been out there trying to get funding and trying to sell. And they have made $10 million in venture capital. And at least one burger chain has signed on. They want Flippies in every restaurant. And if you're not hip to the Flippy phenomenon, Flippy uses thermal sensors and cameras and a variety of things to monitor burgers, cooks the perfect burger every time, can put it on the bun, put cheese on it, you know, dress it different ways. I think the vegetables and stuff have to be human, and the sauces maybe have to be human. But everything about the cooking of the burger, Flippy can do on its own.
I hear your description, and in my mind, it's translating it to the most delicious fast food hamburger that I've ever experienced. And
no line, because Flippy can work like 20 burgers at a time. And with those thermal sensors, they're all going to be exactly the same.
An exactly perfectly prepared, hot and delicious hamburger. I cannot wait to enslave an entire race of robots.
Now, of course, as with everything else, they sort of double down on, it's like, Flippy's not replacing humans. Flippy's just helping. But Flippy's going to replace some humans. And it's going to be a big deal in the burger world.